In today's episode, we get a little bit more real with a casual conversation touching on topics of gatekeeping, the witch aesthetic, neurodivergency, and what it means to be a witch with imposter syndrome in a social media world where everyone looks perfect all the time. If you've ever worried that you're a bad witch, a lazy witch, or you just aren't doing it right, you definitely want to stick around.
Welcome to 2 by Torchlight, where we dive deep and get real about magic and witchcraft, its relationship to science and pop culture, and what it's really like to build a modern practice that's accessible, effective, and unique to you. I'm Aradia, your veteran witch.
And I'm Liz, a newer practitioner. Hang out with us round the torchlight as we talk all things woo and witchcraft. Hi, Aradia.
Hey, Liz.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm tired.
Me too.
May has been a month.
It really has. And I'm sure the question we're going to get asked is, Liz, how did your camping trip go? Not well.
Bugs are dumb.
So it's May. We forgot about Mayfly season. Real quick breakdown. We got up there. I was all excited. The campsite was beautiful. Literally got so far as to get the fire pit blessed. And the heat was just terrible. It was so bad. The clearing that we were in had no shade in it. So it was like direct sun beating down on you. You know those tiny little flies that like hover in clouds?
Yeah.
They were all over the place. So yeah. I looked at my partner and he looks at me and he's sweating and he feels gross. And he goes, do you want to go find something to do locally until the sun goes down? And I was like, do you want to go see a movie? Because it's 4 o'clock and I'm sure the sun will be close to going down by the time it lets out. Right, we went to go get ice cream because there weren't any movies that we wanted to see. We got back and all of a sudden, like an army, the mayflies just kind of swarmed and they were like attacking our faces. Aww. And like getting stuck between my face and my glasses. Oh, it was so bad. So we were like, nope, can't do it. Nope, we're leaving. So yeah, that's how that went. Not too well. But we did end up doing some other stuff for my birthday that was real nice. So
good.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want some good news?
Yes, please.
We need to pull a name for our giveaway winner.
Yes, we do.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to hand this die to my partner across the desk, and he's going to roll it, and he's going to tell me what number he gets. He needs to keep it on the desk. All right. So our winner is Taylor.
Yay!
The Mandala Hair Beauty. In case there's more than one Taylor that's listening right now.
Right.
So yeah, we will reach out to Taylor. Congratulations. We are so excited for you to get your thing. Thank you for supporting the show and your reviews and Patreon and all of that wonderful support because we super appreciate it. So yeah, we'll shoot you an email and let you know the deets about when you're going to get your swag.
Woohoo!
Yay! All right.
So, yes, to get into the meat of the episode, imposter syndrome sucks.
Imposter syndrome really does suck.
And it feels so rampant in the community, in like so many people's lives in general. Like, it's a beast.
So I get questions a lot that sort of tie into imposter syndrome without somebody coming right out and saying, hey, I don't feel good enough to be a witch. I get a lot of like periphery questions that are like, well, how do I know if I'm doing this right? Or how do I know that I'm supposed to be a witch? Or how do I know what kind of witch I am? Or the big one is like, oh, I don't look like what I thought a witch would look like. Or my altar doesn't look like the altars on Instagram, which, ugh. A lot of doubt around people with their practice, especially with newbies. But like, even I fall into it sometimes where I'm like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, dedicated enough. I'm not as knowledgeable as some other people that I may like follow on social media or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is safe from this idea that you're not a good enough witch. And it's so disheartening.
It really is.
Like, to see all these comments, like, so I spend a lot of time on TikTok, right? And so I see comments on my videos and I see comments on other people's videos that are just like looking for validation, which is what imposter syndrome really does to us. It forces us to look for validation outside of our own practice. because I feel like the community at large has sort of allowed this idea to grow that you have to have some sort of ancestry or lineage or some sort of connection, or like you need to have been called to witchcraft since you were a child. We talked about in our Patreon bonus episode from a couple weeks ago how we got started into it and everything, and I mentioned that I had always been drawn to this stuff like as a little kid, and you hear that a lot. People who are drawn to witchcraft have been drawn to it since they were a child, but that sort of idea of you're supposed to have always had this connection because that's the story that you hear so often really invalidates the idea that somebody could just, you know, discover paganism as an adult and be like, hey, this seems interesting, I think I want to try this out, which is just as valid as somebody who was like born into a line of practicing witches, which doesn't happen nearly as much as people think it does.
Yeah, no, or even sometimes well, I got interested in this in high school, so I always just thought it was some high schooler thing.
The idea that it's like a phase that all teenage girls go through, yeah, right?
Right. Or there's, again, something that I saw on TikTok, not super recently, but within the last year at least, was there was a big push to acknowledge non-European Norse practitioners. An example that I'm thinking of specifically was there was a Black creator who is a practicing Norse pagan, and they were being told that they could not practice because they were Black. And it's like, Norse practice isn't closed. Like,
yeah,
excuse me.
Norse practice isn't closed. And second of all, there's absolutely archaeological evidence to suggest that there were people of color in that area at that time.
Right. Like Viking was a job title. It wasn't a race.
Well, so on that topic specifically, I'll link to a friend of mine on TikTok who is an archaeologist. And I'll link to his TikTok because he goes into a lot of it. He talks a lot about the idea that Vikings had dreads and that means that white people can have dreads. Spoiler alert, no, you can't. Or at least it's definitely frowned upon. But also the idea that like Norse, like media that's very Norse pagan and like heathen themed nowadays, having Black actors is anachronistic.
Oh,
and he's
yeah.
like, no, it's not. So we'll link to him because he's got a lot of great information on that. But yeah, it's totally, I guess gatekeeping really does wrap up with the idea of imposter syndrome, right? Because if you hear somebody who's maybe been in the community longer than you have, or maybe just is a better speaker than you, is a better communicator, saying things like only certain people can do things, or if you don't do something this way, then you're not really getting it, or you're not really involved in it, you're not really a witch, heaven forbid. That gatekeeping really ties into a lot of newer witches imposter syndrome, where they're like, oh, well, I heard this person say that if you're doing this practice, it needs to be done this way. And
right.
if it's not done that way, then you're not doing it right. And so I must not be doing it right. And like, I just want to burn all of that shit to the ground.
There's a part of me that thinks that gatekeeping is a way that people deal with imposter syndrome. I wonder if it's just one of those things that somebody with imposter syndrome might feel like they put in the time or the years or the effort, or like, I've been doing this for X amount of time, so like, I can't be an imposter anymore. But like, how else do I prove that except for digging my heels in and saying, you know, oh, I had to do this to get here, so if you haven't done this yet, then you're not there yet.
Yeah, that idea that like it somehow gives you a level of legitimacy.
Right.
No, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Mind blown. Anyways.
I mean, obviously, there are some people that just gatekeep to be assholes, right?
Oh, absolutely. But like, part of me just wonders if it isn't just another stage of imposter syndrome for some people.
See, now I'm going to look at all of these like gatekeeping right? posts through a new lens and be like, okay, are you an asshole?
Or are you just insecure
about your practice? Yeah. Because either way, it's something we need to fix, but they require very different fixes.
Especially, you'll see it a lot too on posts that are more lighthearted. Anybody who's kind of like making a lighthearted joke or something, you'll see like, oh, that isn't the right way to do it. Or, oh, you're putting a bad name. I think the one that I sent you with the spaghetti noodles, blessing your house with the steam off of spaghetti noodles because, oh, it's all just intention, right? One, that was funny as hell. Still one of the funniest witch talks I've ever seen. Two, it's like those people that are like, how can you say that you're a practicing witch when you're blah, 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 like,
yeah, bitch, I'm gonna bless my house with pasta steam. I am French. Listen, carbs are in my blood, okay?
But like not being able to enjoy the lighthearted side of it and enjoy poking good-natured fun at like community experiences.
There's definitely a difference between being serious about something and being too serious about something. You can have reverence for the practice, but also poke fun at it. I fully believe that my spells work. I have evidence that my spells have worked, but I'm still sitting here chanting over a candle. I like to think about it. Have you seen those memes, those Tumblr posts that are like how aliens would
approach
the human race from like an anthropological standpoint? Because like we're terrifying, or we're like the dumb puppies that need to be coddled. Like
those plants evolved to poison them when they eat it, but they're using it to season their food.
Yeah. Like sometimes you have to have a sense of humor about stuff like this. And I think that definitely plays into this idea of imposter syndrome, because you feel like this is a very sacred thing, which is true. Spirituality is a very sacred practice, but also you have to be able to have fun with it, or else what's the point?
Right. Again, like I said, I think it's somebody who just is still figuring themselves out, but wants to feel like they're there or something. I definitely think something to bring up while we're talking about TikTok and stuff like that is a lot of what you see on social media. These beautifully, like you've said before, these beautifully curated Instagrams and these people that are filming these beautifully intricate like spells and making their practice look like this big, solemn, intricate thing. A lot of the times that's not how people actually practice.
Because like that, okay, social media, I love social media. It's my job. Like I make a living off of social media. But it at the same time is extremely problematic because it is a huge cause of imposter syndrome, not just in like magic and witchcraft, but like in every single facet of life.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing that people, I think, sometimes forget, because social media gives you a window into other people's lives, right? So you're like, oh, this is how this person is. But the thing that people need to remember about social media from a social media professional is that it's all staged, all of it, 100%. All media, not even just social media, all media is staged at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Even documentaries are staged and scripted ahead of time. Like, not scripted, but like storyboarded ahead of time to tell a particular story. Like all media is staged. A lot of times it's very specifically curated to give off a certain perspective. If you're looking at someone's very carefully put together Instagram page and it looks very casual on the outside, that casual aesthetic is extremely carefully crafted. And because it's all branding, whether or not you're trying to like make a living off of Instagram, it's all personal branding. And so you have to go into it with a plan. And, you know, you're choosing certain photos and you're writing captions and rewriting captions and using certain hashtags and like perspective on things and posting things at certain times to get a point across, to tell a story. Even if you're casual with it, you're still trying to put out a certain image. That can be extremely disheartening for somebody who doesn't match that image. But the thing is, everybody is different, right? Like you said, no one practices the same. Every practice is different, and social media can be a huge red herring, almost, I guess, to what it's actually like being a witch.
Oh, yeah. It's like looking in a magazine and looking at the models and being like, oh, well, they look like that every single day. That's just how they live their lives. That's how they look all the time. And it's like, no, that took hundreds of dollars of camera equipment and lighting equipment and makeup.
And Photoshop. Because even the most gorgeous supermodel is still Photoshopped in magazines.
Right. And so, like, it's the same thing. It's I mean, even me posting about going to a fair the other day and taking a picture of my stack of things that I was getting ready to roll out to the car, I took that picture 3 times and I angled it different ways so that I could get the best shot. I mean,
right.
Even going so far as like your friends' social media pages, you're only seeing what they're choosing to put out there. You can't look at a friend's social page and know everything that's going on in their life, because all that's being shown is what they are choosing to put out there. So that is a very dimensional view of their life.
Like, I can't tell you. I refuse to let anybody watch me record TikToks. Like, even my partner. We've been together for years. He has seen me at my best. He has seen me at my absolute worst. right? And even him, I'll be like, honey, I need to film. Do you think maybe you could go in the other room for like 20 minutes? Because like, it's embarrassing to talk about. But and part of my imposter syndrome, honestly, is I have a hard time watching my videos after the fact. I have a hard time listening to my voice on camera. I have a hard time like hearing things that I've written be read aloud by other people. I remember I was in seventh grade and I wrote some essay for class and it was really good and the teacher wanted to read it out loud. And I had to ask her if I could stand in the hallway while she did it because I could not listen to it.
Yeah.
Like I will record TikToks multiple times. I will record the same video, the same content, the same words, essentially, multiple times to get what I feel like is the right take. Sometimes I feel like I should cut together like all of my bloopers.
Apparently, those are really popular on TikTok right now. People have been doing it. There's a lot of them. People have been doing it and they're doing well.
I think it all comes down to there's this like aesthetic that a lot of people have in their mind that goes along with being a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And social media has only made this worse. Now, I'm going to preface everything I'm about to say by saying that I support aesthetics in witchcraft. I know for a while, the big thing was pushing away from a certain aesthetics because it's not necessary, which is absolutely true. However, there is something to be said for using or utilizing a certain aesthetic in your magic. All of these little things like dressing a certain way, using a certain smell, setting up your altar a certain way. These are all symbolic actions that help get you in the brain space for making magic and for working with energy. So if you need to dress in frilly black lace because it makes you feel more like a witch when you're going into your spell work, as long as you understand that the magic isn't coming from like your costume, then it's okay to a point. Like it's okay to do these things because all of these little aesthetic changes that you can make before you go into ritual or something like that is just, it's getting your brain to understand that we are shifting from a mundane space to a liminal space, to a space where we're making magic. And that's all psychology. And I could go on for days about how there is a place for aesthetic and witchcraft. However, the problem is that a lot of people feel like if they don't match a certain aesthetic, then they're not doing it right.
I feel like this is almost the same conversation that we had with color magic, where it's like, yeah, somebody can say that yellow is a happy color and it's the color that you use when you want to do magic for happiness and stuff like that. But if you associate the color blue with happiness because it was grandma's favorite color, that's going to be a whole lot more powerful to use that way. So like in the same way, using aesthetics, like you said, to get you in that mindset is a very powerful tool, but doing aesthetics to feel legitimate because it's how somebody else did it is not serving you in that same way.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly it. So like sticking on this example of like wearing certain clothes, right? If you want to wear like the black corset and the lace and the witch hat when you go into ritual because it makes you feel more powerful, that is good aesthetics. If you feel like you have to wear that outfit so that people recognize you as a witch and recognize what it is that you're trying to do, like from an outside perspective, that is not good aesthetics. That is not putting the aesthetics to good use.
Right.
You know, it's all about making you feel powerful, not influencing what others are thinking of you. And now this isn't talking about glamour at all, because glamour is literally magic to influence how others see you, which has a lot to do with aesthetics, but that's a completely different topic. As an example, if you go to Google and you type in the word witch, you get two or three very different aesthetics. One, you get a lot of the Wicked Witch of the West. You get a lot of like green skin, scraggly nails, pointed black hat, like, you know, the image of like the Halloween hag. But then the other aesthetic that you get is an image of a beautiful, thin, white cis woman in slightly gothic boho garb, like standing out in nature, or maybe like giving a very spooky look to the camera, but like is a very specific kind of image, right? And then you scroll a little bit, you get like Minerva McGonagall. You know, props to my girl.
It is a crime that she is so low. Just saying. Of course, the Sanderson sisters.
So you get either you get stuff from media or you get these two very different aesthetics. And this completely erases from the conversation anybody who doesn't look like that, because that is the image, like that thin, white, pretty, cis, boho goth character, right? I say that everybody is picturing it in their head. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. If you don't fit that image, it almost feels like you don't have a place at the table sometimes. And there's a big problem with like, oh, there are closed practices for people of color that white people should not be messing with, right? And so there's been a disturbing trend where some people are taking that and going, okay, then they need to stay in that lane, which is absolutely not the case.
Right.
It erases people of color from the table. It removes anybody who is not, you know, thin and beautiful. It removes anybody who's not femme presenting. Like a lot of issue that you hear from men or mask presenting or non-binary people who want to practice witchcraft is they don't look like the typical witch aesthetic, that they don't feel like they're welcome at public rituals, or they might not feel like they're welcome at like moon circles and stuff like that, because they're all occupied by this very particular image, which I just think is so sad, because anybody can be a witch. Absolutely anybody. Being a witch is a choice. Like, and I've gotten into this argument with people on TikTok a lot, but like you choose to be a witch because it is the beliefs that go along with witchcraft may not be something that you can choose. Like you may just know in your soul that something is true and you have that belief and you're not choosing to believe it. That's just, it's who you are. That's fine. But the act of being a witch, the act of consciously casting spells, making magic, calling yourself a witch is a choice at the end of the day. You're a witch because you say you are. Also, if you haven't cast a spell in 3 years, but you still call yourself a witch, you're still a witch. You don't have to fit this cookie cutter mold of what a witch is supposed to look like, how a witch is supposed to act, how often you're supposed to cast, or if you don't pull your tarot cards every day, then you're not a proper witch. Like, it all gets wrapped up in this very particular aesthetic that is very alienating to anyone who doesn't fit this very narrow mold, which, spoiler alert, is like 90% of the people practicing witchcraft don't fit this very particular mold.
Right. And then, like, that's just in general, but then you throw on top things like mental illness or things going on in life. Like, I cannot imagine, and this is something that you'll be able to speak on, so I actually want to ask you about this. So many people, especially when they have children, but like when they go through a big life change, their whole lives kind of end up revolving around that. Again, like going back to like having kids, your entire life becomes about that kid for a very long time. So like, did you kind of go through a phase when your little witchlet came into the world and like was very young and like very dependent on you? Like, did you lose witchcraft a little bit, or feel like you were kind of, not to put you on the spot or anything?
There have been many times in my life where I have, where my practice has fallen to sort of like the back burner. And yes, one of those times was when the witchlet was born. I had a very rough pregnancy. I was on the couch for like 4 months straight. I couldn't even get up to like brush my hair. Like, I was almost hospitalized. It was very bad.
Oh no.
I will never be pregnant again for many different reasons. But I didn't do any witchcraft for those 9 months while I was pregnant. I didn't cast any spells. I barely lit deity candles. I could not do anything except survive. And that is an extreme example, because I was sick every day and I was dehydrated and like I physically couldn't do anything. But sometimes you go through life events that take a huge mental and emotional toll. And physically, you're fine. You still don't have the energy to do things like practice. Like, so when our bodies are experiencing stress, like high levels of stress, not like, oh my God, I need to get, you know, this deadline done at work by 5 o'clock today, but like high levels of stress, your body physically responds to that. Your parasympathetic nervous system is your sort of like passive nervous system. And what happens when you're experiencing high levels of stress is your sympathetic nervous system kicks in, which is what a lot of people know as fight or flight. And what happens when your body is in fight or flight mode is your brain literally is diverting energy away from secondary systems like digestion to just staying alive. So that's why, like, when you're super stressed for a long period of time, it's harder for you to lose weight. You might not have regulated eating. You may have like actual digestive issues or stomach pains, constipation. Your body will physically react because your brain isn't regulating your digestive system, for example, because it's like, oh, we need to survive this period where we think we're going to die. Because like, our brains are still working in sort of that like ancestral area where like, your brain can't tell the difference between stress from a serious life event and stress from like being chased by a bear.
Right.
So all your body knows is, hey, we need to stay alive. And so emotionally and spiritually and mentally, we're doing a lot of things too. We are diverting energy from secondary things like hobbies, art, spending time with friends, witchcraft, spiritual practice, to just staying alive, to just getting up, doing the bare minimum to keep ourselves alive, getting through your day, going home, going to bed, doing it over the next day. Like serious life events or bouts of depression, mental illness, like you said, all of this is going to have an effect on how much energy we can dedicate to a spiritual practice. Going through that is normal. People deal with that. People have mental health issues all the time. A lot more people now because people are talking about it more. People are accepting that this is something that they're dealing with. They're not just brushing it under the rug. They say, like, we have higher levels of PTSD nowadays, but there's an argument to be made for, like, people are just talking about it more.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make you less of a witch because you're just trying to survive and you can't divert energy from the act of surviving to, like, light your deity candle. And yeah, you know what? It may take 30 seconds to light a candle, say a prayer, blow it out, move on with your day. But that's 30 seconds of energy that somebody may not have.
Yeah.
Like the spoons theory, right? Or the spell slots theory.
I love it.
Major life events will have an effect and it doesn't make you less of a witch.
You should absolutely look up spoon theory because it's really interesting. And then if you look up the spell slot expansion of spoon theory, that's what we're talking about.
It's basically just a method of explaining how people with chronic illness, whether it's physical or mental, deal with having enough energy to do things throughout their day. It's really interesting. If you are neurodivergent and you've never heard of it, definitely go look it up. We'll mm-hmm. put links in show notes to stuff. But that brings up another point too, when it comes to imposter syndrome and neurodivergency, is that a lot of questions I get is, I can't meditate, so I can't do those beginning steps to work with energy, so I guess I can't cast spells and be a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not doing it right because I can't like meditate and ground before. That's why I teach entire classes on just like how to start working with energy, because people think it has to be one way. It's only one way, and that's not the case. And that feeds into a lot of imposter syndrome too. I actually just listened to an awesome webinar today about Ayurvedic medicine and Ayurvedic holistic philosophy.
Can I get that in English, please?
Ayurvedic medicine and Ayurvedic treatment is it's a type of Eastern medical practice from India. Oh, God, how do I boil this down to like 10 seconds? You're familiar with the chakra system, right?
Vaguely.
Okay. Most witches have at least heard of chakras.
Yeah, yeah.
That is an Ayurvedic practice.
And basically, that's fine if that's where you want to leave it. I was just like, Ayurvedic, is it like scent? Is it like air?
Yeah.
Air. So that's why I was asking about that. Sorry.
It's holistic health and wellness from India.
Okay.
Whole different topic. Anyway, so I was listening to this really great webinar today, and the guy was talking about meditation and how a lot of people think the point of meditation is to clear your mind, right?
Usually that's what you assume, yeah.
The point of meditation is to focus your mind. And so he made this great analogy, and it was like, I'm never going to forget it. He said a lot of people will feel like their meditation has failed if their mind wanders 100 times while they're meditating. But as long as you refocus your mind 101 times, then your meditation was successful. And I really liked that because it reframes the idea of what meditation is supposed to be. And I tell people all the time, like, meditation doesn't have to be just sitting in silence, clearing your mind. That is one way of meditating, but there are tons of other forms of meditation. And if you're neurodivergent, for example, sitting in a quiet room with no stimuli, trying to keep your mind as empty as possible is the most difficult thing you have ever tried to do. Like, one thing I will suggest is to have some kind of outside stimuli, have like a focal point. Stare into a candle, go for a walk that you like, don't need to pay attention to your steps. You know where you're going, so you don't have to focus on whether or not you're getting lost. Stare into water, like use fidget toys while you're meditating. Like, these are all different ways to achieve the same results that can really allow you to get a handle on that imposter syndrome. Because yeah, you may not be doing it the quote unquote traditional way, but you're still doing it and you're getting the end result and you're getting to that end goal. And that's what's important.
Yeah.
Not how you get there, but that you get there.
And we touched on this a little bit during the Foundations episode, talking about meditation and things like that and those different ways of going through with it. I actually, one that I've kind of realized on my own recently, because the candle one is one that I'll do often. I'll light a candle and I'll use that to kind of focus myself. I have found myself scribbling a lot while doing it, not doodling, because doodling, you're still kind of keeping to like a rough idea of what you're trying to make or whatever, but like mm-hmm. literally just back and forth or like random shapes, but like nothing cohesive, just moving my hand as I'm focusing my mind elsewhere. And I've actually found that it really helps. And sometimes afterwards, I'll look at my scribble and I'll see if I can make out any shapes in it, like my absent scribbling. And it's been a really interesting exercise.
Oh my God, I wish you could see my face right now. Do you know what that's called?
No, what is it?
Automatic writing.
Okay.
So automatic writing is the practice of allowing your mind to go blank. And some people believe it's your intuition, your subconscious coming forward. Some people believe that like it's, you know, allowing spirits to guide your hand, whatever your belief is. But the idea is that you clear your mind and you just let your hand go and then you interpret what's on the paper when you're done.
Okay.
So you have stumbled upon automatic writing. Congratulations.
It's interesting. There's always this recurring shape that I keep seeing come up. But
oh,
yeah. That's been happening ever since I was a kid.
That is super interesting. And we don't have enough time to dive in on that, but I want to talk about that.
I did not know it was a different thing.
You have stumbled upon this thing that is used for something else, right?
Yep.
But it's helping you get your end result, which is to meditate. And so keep doing that thing. Perfect. You're doing perfect.
It's funny. I'll have to send you the shape because now I'm curious.
It's, oh God. Okay. No. So sigil work, there are many different ways to like create magical sigils.
Yep.
But if you keep making the same shape, every time you just like let your mind wander and then like doodle, you can absolutely incorporate that into like a personal power sigil, which I think would be so cool.
That was one thing when I had realized the doodling thing. That was one thing I was wondering, like if I meditate on a specific thought that I would want to turn into a sigil and then just start doodling, and then the whatever prominent shape comes out, because you know when you doodle, like certain shapes end up getting filled in more than others, so it's darker in the whole scribble. Uh-huh. I was like, I wonder if that's how I could make a sigil.
There are people who make sigils that way. Absolutely. They just like meditate and channel the information. Yeah. And then they look at the paper and they're like, oh hey, look, I have a doodle.
I have a thing.
I have a magical thing. This has nothing to do with imposter syndrome.
I know, I'm sorry.
That was a really fun little tangent. Thank you for mentioning that.
We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll get into it in the after show.
Oh, yeah, we could do that. Or we could do like a whole episode on divination and channeling, that's done. And all that kind of fun stuff. Anyway, imposter syndrome sucks.
Yeah. And like, this is the part where usually in episodes we'd be like, here are ways you can do things. But like, I kind of want to bring this up actually. As we were getting ready to start recording this episode, Aradi and I both kind of sat there and we're like, yeah, we can talk about imposter syndrome, but like, here's the thing, we have nothing to say to do about it. But like, that's kind of the shitty truth, isn't it? Like, imposter syndrome is such a weed in your ear. You know what I mean? And we don't want to give the platitudes. We don't want to give the like, just keep going, because like, obviously,
believe
that's,
in yourself.
Like, obviously, no matter what, like the only way to counteract it is to just keep going and ignoring it. But like, that's hard, and that's not the only thing. Like, it takes a lot of hard work to continue on, and we want to acknowledge that and not make it sound like it's the easiest thing in the world. Oh, you're depressed, just be happy.
Anyway,
did I strike a nerve?
But also, like, imposter syndrome looks different for everybody too, so there's no one fix. Like, really the best thing you can do is to like dive deep into your own shit, unfortunately.
Shadow
and be like, okay,
work.
why do I feel this way? How am I holding myself back? And like, do the hard work. And it sucks and it's hard and there's no roadmap for it, but that's kind of the way it is, unfortunately. It's shadow work.
Yeah.
So if you had to give one tip or suggestion, I know we said we were going to be like, this is how you fix this, but like, if you had a tip or a suggestion, what would you say to somebody who was struggling with
it?
Oh
God.
What has helped you?
So honestly, just letting myself feel it. And I know that sucks to say, but like, because usually you want to fight the imposter syndrome. You feel it and immediately you want to be like, no, that's not true. Like, sometimes it is so much more valuable to lean into the feeling,
to really figure out where it's coming from and like figuring out exactly what is making you feel that way and kind of learning from it that way. That's what I got.
I would say that my suggestion would be, this is going to sound so counterintuitive, don't talk to other people about it, at least not right away. Don't make that the focus of it. Because I've noticed, at least for me, and like we said, everybody is different, everybody experiences this differently, but at least for me, if I'm having a moment of imposter syndrome, regardless of what it is, and I'm talking to my partner about it, and he'll try to bolster me. He'll be like, oh, but you know, that's not true. And you're so good at this. And you know, you did this really well. That doesn't have the effect he sometimes wants it to have. I think it almost mm-hmm. sometimes having somebody else try to like bolster my confidence almost makes me feel more guilty.
Yeah.
Like I've somehow tricked them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
like I've tricked them all. So like absolutely talk to people about it and like commiserate and everything. But what I've noticed is to instead look at the situation, sit down and like take a step back. Almost like disassociate from the feelings of imposter syndrome and go, okay, what would I say if my best friend was saying this to me about how she felt about herself?
Oh, it's such a reality check.
Like if Liz came to me and was like, oh, I'm so terrible at this and this thing that I've accomplished isn't really that big of a deal, what would I say to her? I'd probably be like, bitch, fucking please, first of all. But like thinking about how you would handle it if your best friend were saying that to you, it's so hard. You can recognize the hypocrisy in comforting and telling a friend, oh, that's not true, but telling yourself the opposite. Like mm-hmm. you can recognize that, but internalizing it is hard.
Yeah.
But recognizing the hypocrisy in you being too hard on yourself is the first step to improving it. And so that's what I do a lot. You know, I'll be like, okay, that thing I just said to myself, what would I say to Liz if she said it to me?
That brought up so many more things I want to talk about and we don't have time.
We'll have to put a pin in it. We'll make notes and talk about it another time.
Yes.
Or we can keep the conversation going in Discord.
Yes, that too. But yes, so long story short, imposter syndrome sucks, and it's really, really hard to fight through, but just know, and one thing that I find helps me so much, too, is just knowing that I'm not the only one, and knowing that it's not only that I'm not the only one, but it's a lot of people. Just know you're not going through it alone.
Like, I know this isn't, like, our normal structured type of episode. We were more just kind of, like, talking and rambling, but I feel like for a topic like this, this is important.
Yeah.
To just be very real with the conversation and let it flow because, like you said, so many people suffer from it, and it's important for everybody to know that they're not alone. It's important to know that, you know, people that you may look up to are still dealing with this, too, even if we're not talking about it every single day. Like, everybody has to deal with this at some point. And dealing with imposter syndrome does not mean that you're less of a witch. It doesn't mean that you're less of a person. It means that you're human and you're real. And also, like, if you want to frame it this way, it means that you really care about what it is that you're doing because you care enough to make sure that you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And so as long as you are doing it authentically to yourself, I hate that buzzword, but it fits here. As long as you're doing it authentically to yourself and to how you want to be as a person, how you want to be as a witch, how you want to practice and what works for you and what gets you to the end result, that's what matters.
Exactly.
So,
yes.
Babies, if you are dealing with this, we love you and we are here for you and we feel you.
I'm going to take this time to say, if you want to keep the conversation going, because I know I'm going to have so much more to say about this, come join us in the Discord. A lot of awesome conversations, as always.
You can also find us on social media. You can email us, 2bytorchlight@gmail.com, website, 2bytorchlight.com. All of those things, we're not hard to find.
I would hope not. After all the work we've put in.
But if you've listened all the way to the end, thank you so much for dealing with our ramblings tonight. Congratulations to Taylor again
yes.
for winning the Lucky 13 giveaway.
And we will hear you all. Well, you'll hear us next time.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, bye, guys. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening and for supporting the creation of this podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at www.2bytorchlight.com, along with episode archives, contact info, our press kit, and more. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks for another episode.